Chapter 13. The Perfect Life. Chancellor Corinth lunged. His form was smooth, displaying no hesitation between thought and action. His blade thunked repeatedly against the slowly rotating practice mannequin. Gouges covered it, crossing over one another, creating an intricate pattern of bloodless wounds. He retreated, blade slashing out as if to deflect a counterattack. Fulgrim approached, hands behind his back.
Splendid form.
The training room was meant for use of the gubernatorial guard, but Fulgrim had it on good authority that they rarely used it. Corinth, it seemed, was taking advantage of its abandonment. Startled, Corinth whirled. Fulgrim's hand snapped up, easily swatting aside Corinth's blade. The Chancellor leapt back with an oath. Fulgrim grinned.
My apologies. I sometimes forget that unaugmented humans aren't as observant as one of my warriors.
Corinth stared at him, blade still half extended. Slowly, he lowered it.
No apologies necessary, my lord.
Fulgrim, Belleros. Remember?
Fulgrim.
Given the current situation, I thought it best to err on the side of formality.
Belleros, I assure you, it is all for the best.
Thus speaks the tyrant.
Fulgrim slapped the practice mannequin, causing it to spin creakily.
I'm no tyrant. If I were, you would think twice before saying such things.
He paused. Most men would, anyway. He circled the practice mannequin, studying the newer marks.
Ambidextrous?
What? Fulgrim held up a hand and waggled his fingers.
Are you ambidextrous? An equal number of right and left-handed cuts.
Corinth nodded slowly.
Yes, by training rather than inclination.
Admirable. Fulgrim leaned on the mannequin. Would you care to spar? Corinth's eyes widened.
Fulgrim laughed. I assure you, you won't come to harm. I'm quite careful of my opponents.
He paused.
In practice, at least.
The Chancellor shook his head.
I think I'll pass on the offer, kind as it is. I've had my fill of swordplay today.
He spoke curtly, with little of the warmth he'd previously displayed. Understandable, perhaps, given that the government he'd so loyally served had just been dissolved by Fulgrim's order. The city, and by extension the planet, was under martial law in all but name. The bulk of the Continental Army was on its way back to Nova Bassilos, and the patricians were in an uproar, as their own careful manoeuvrings were thrown into chaos. Fulgrim stopped him.
You understand, don't you?
Corinth looked away.
I understand. But you are wrong. You are provoking a war for your own ends. The cost in lives alone will be enormous.
The ends justify the means. Corinth laughed.
I'm sure Pandion's ancestor said much the same when he created the Glass Waste, or when he conquered the western provinces.
He shook his head.
You bring us more of the same. I hoped you would change things for the better. Instead, you seem determined to hold Byzas in bondage of the worst sort.
He looked at Fulgrim.
I asked you once what you would make of us. I have my answer.
Belleros, I will help Byzas, but there must always be bitter with the sweet. He looked down at the Chancellor.
I cannot allow this world to fall to anarchy, no matter how beneficial it might seem. There must be strong foundations to build anything of note. And Pandion is one of those foundations?
He is what I have. He is a recognizable figurehead, a known quantity.
He has shown a willingness to work with us, and an ability to adapt to a changing situation.
Necessary qualities in a planetary governor.
Qualities you could find in a democratically elected council, Corinth said,
his voice growing heated.
A representative government, chosen by the people.
Fulgrim laughed.
Which people? The tenant farmers in the agri-circle? The men and women being worked to death in the ore facilities?
He shook his head.
No. I know who you mean, even if you don't. It would be men like Patrician Bucephalos and his ilk, a council of vipers riven by infighting and politicking, or worse, a military junta. You do us an injustice,
Corinth said, almost shouting.
If the people... were but given the chance,
they will be, but not yet.
not this way. There must be order, peace, so that what has been forgotten might flourish anew. It is a slow thing, saving a world. It cannot be done solely at the point of a sword, or with high-minded ideals alone. It must be done correctly, efficiently, else it will simply fall apart at the first sign of strain. So you will condemn them to the status quo in the name of efficiency?
Fulgrim hesitated.
That isn't what I meant.
Corinth looked at him.
Isn't it?
He swallowed thickly.
This has never truly been about us, I think. We were nothing more than a test, a challenge. And you are determined to prove yourself correct, to prove your way is the best way, whatever the cost. Are we nothing more than game pieces to you and this Imperium of yours? If so, I'm not sure I wish to live in it.
Belleros.
Corinth slumped.
There is nothing more to say. You are in control, after all, and I am Chancellor in name only. Soon I might not even be that.
He slipped past Fulgrim, and the Primarch let him go. Corinth stopped at the door.
Why did you turn them down?
He asked.
They could have been of help to you.
Fulgrim didn't have to ask who he was referring to.
They are children, and I have no time for children's games.
He frowned.
Byzas must be brought into compliance.
That is your desire, not your purpose.
It is both.
That you think that is proof that you don't understand anything.
A question for you, then. Why did you turn me down that first night? All of this could have been avoided had you seized the laurel.
Corinth didn't answer. He left without a word.
Fulgrim almost pursued him. He was shaking with anger. He wanted to destroy something. He spun, smashing his forearm through the practice dummy, shattering it.
He looked down at the broken mannequin.
Damn it!
Corinth was wrong. He understood perfectly. The way forward was clear. Pandion was the best choice of a bad lot. He provided stability, consistency, in an unstable time, a known quantity. To overthrow him, to replace him with a council of unknowns, or worse, a group of men the common people of Byzas hated, was to risk planet-wide upheaval. The patricians might have accepted Corinth as regent, but they would never accept an elected body of malcontents, just as they would not suffer one of their own to rule over the rest. No, Pandion was the least offensive choice. That Corinth couldn't see that was proof his idealism was outweighing his common sense. The changes he desired could be made within the existing system, if only he had the patience to do so.
Fulgrim laughed harshly. And who was he to fault another man's impatience?
How much had his impatience cost him already in his life? How much might it yet cost him if he wasn't careful? His hands curled into fists. It was hard. Mortals moved and thought so slowly. It took them an inordinately long time to come to blindingly obvious conclusions, to see what must be done. That was why he had to make the choices he made, to make up for their imperfections, to see that their flaws did not cause harm to them, or others. His fists tightened, and his knuckles popped beneath his gauntlets. He had made the mistake of leaving mortals to find their own way once before, and they had proven themselves incapable of following the correct path. He closed his eyes, feeling again the crackle of the stun baton against the skin of his palm, and the crunch of the caretaker's spine as Fulgrim seized him and shook the life from him. The Kallax worker protests had shown him the consequences of disorder. Instability led to violence, and violence to death. Not the deaths of the rich or influential, but the deaths of the worker and the peasant. It was the duty of the strong to protect the weak, to see that they did not suffer from their own foolishness. Corinth didn't understand that. He saw only oppression instead of necessity. He saw enforced stability as a cage, preventing growth, rather than as a necessary evil. But he would learn. Fulgrim would teach him. Teach them. He was the illuminator, and his light would guide them on the path ahead. Despite his confidence, he felt a flicker of uncertainty. A skillful duelist forced his opponent to make the moves that benefited him least, and the duelist the most. He had called the Sabazian Brotherhood's bluff. Only time would tell whether or not that was exactly what they'd wanted. The floor trembled. He turned, listening. He heard a distant boom, muffled shouts. An alarm began to sound, its piercing wail cutting across his eardrums. Fulgrim raced to the window and flung it open. Streaks of orange and red striated the sky. The shapes of low-altitude airships spun in a slow, stately jewel beneath the sun, and the chatter of stub cannons ratcheted through the air. As he watched, an airship banked, expelling its explosive cargo. Airships. They were bombing the army shipyards, destroying the few airships that weren't otherwise deployed. Bucephalos was smart. The city would be well and truly cut off once the enemy arrived to encircle it. Fulgrim stepped back, a smile of anticipation stretching across his face. All doubt was forgotten as the illuminator receded, and the Phoenician readied himself. It had begun. The mutant grunted as Fabius took a sample from the back of its neck. It was a stunted thing, covered in tumours beneath its robes and bandoliers of antique ammunition. More of them waited nearby, watching the process with something approaching awe.
"That's it. That's all right. I'm not here to hurt you."
The words came out in a steady monotone, repeated at regular intervals. Fabius wasn't sure whether or not the creatures understood his words. So long as they found his tone soothing, it didn't matter. The sludgy oasis sat along the northernmost border of the glass waste, where the fens of the border country gave way to the grasslands of the Chalcedonian lowlands. A few barren trees hunkered over a wide pool of dark water, where the scabby steeds of the mutants were thirstily gulping their fill. The long-limbed equoids were only distantly reminiscent of Terran equines, being more related to ungulates. They had stiff patches of iridescent hair covering their muscular, leathery forms, and their splayed hooves reminded him of hands. Toxicity warnings crawled across the interior of his helmet, alerting him to the high levels of radiation in the air. The glass waste was saturated with it. It was in the water, the air, the soil, even in the few living things that had managed to survive. The inhabitants of the waste were on a slow, inevitable slide to complete genetic dissolution. Each generation more mutated and smaller than the last. But those who remained were better adapted to survive the various ailments that afflicted them. The Continental Government had limited contact with the few inhabitants of the wastes, save when the more desperate groups of mutants would raid the outer rim of the Agri-Circle, looking for food. It had taken their people weeks to convince one of the more civilized groups to meet with the newcomers. Time well spent, in Fabius's opinion. They might have wasted months trying to track them down otherwise. When he'd finished, the mutant rubbed its neck and looked up at him with milky eyes. It mumbled something in its slurred tongue, and he nodded. The dialect was as degraded as the speaker, but he understood it nonetheless.
"The children next," Fabius said. "Males only."
"Why do you waste time talking to them?" An ident rune gave a ping, identifying the speaker. Alconex Flavius. A crawl of information followed, but Fabius ignored it. He barely cared about the fool's name, but ignorance was to be challenged.
"Bedside manner," he voxed flatly.
Alconex laughed. Alconex was always laughing. The sound made the mutants twitch and clutched their weapons more tightly. Fabius hissed in annoyance.
"Is that what you call it?" Alconex continued.
He seemed to think they were having a conversation. Fabius turned. Alconex stopped laughing. Fabius studied his brother legionary, dissecting him with his eyes. Instinctively, Alconex's hand fell to the hilt of his blade. Fabius smiled and turned back to his work. The first of the children were brought forward by a shuffling thing he assumed was a parent.
"Yes, it is important that they do not fear us, or this procedure."
The children whimpered as he took his samples, but that was to be expected.
"Fear leads to resentment, and resentment to resistance. If they resist, there is a significant danger of waste.
Waste of what?
Genetic material,
Fabius said, as if talking to an infant. The cogitation units in his vambrace whirred softly, calculating. The samples would be compared to those taken from the rest of the populace to better develop a baseline. Once the average had been established, he could begin weeding out the exceptional from the inferior. A long, thankless task, but one he performed with all due diligence. To falter even for a moment was to risk wasting a valuable resource.
Genetic? Are you serious? Alkanex spat. These creatures are walking cancers. That they are walking at all implies a certain hardiness, wouldn't you say?
Fabius gestured for the next group to come forward.
And that is what we need. We need nothing from these animals.
Fabius closed his eyes. He felt his temper fraying with every word out of the other legionary's mouth. They didn't understand. None of them. They saw, but refused to comprehend. Even those like Abdomon, who had witnessed the blight firsthand, did not truly grasp the enormity of it.
You are not here to dictate what we do or do not need, brother. You are here only to see to it that I return to Nova Basilos in one piece. And you can do that without talking, I think. In fact, why not go wait in the Stormbird? I won't be long.
He gestured towards the gunship some distance away. Alkanex turned away.
Suit yourself, spider.
Fabius froze. A child whimpered, more shrilly than the others. He looked down and released the boy, letting him scamper away. He turned.
What did you call me?
Alkanex glanced at him, his pose lazy.
Kasparos challenged you.
And so?
You didn't accept.
Why would I?
Honour.
Fabius laughed.
There is no honour in killing a fool.
Alkanex's fingers tapped at the hilt of his sword.
Which one of you is the fool?
Fabius turned away.
Both. Him for making the challenge and me for antagonising him.
He shook his head.
It's so easy for you. All of you. Your enemy is across the field, always. But my enemy is harder to bring to battle. My enemy is in our very blood and bone and strikes where I least suspect at every turn.
The blight is gone.
The blight was a story for most of the new recruits. A thing that had happened and might yet happen again. A cautionary tale. But they could see the reality of it if they so chose. The lines of grief and despair etched into the faces of the 200. Cracks in marble. Imperfections. Visible only if you knew where to look. And Fabius could see nothing else. He laughed again, startling the huddled mutants.
Is that what you believe? Then you are even more foolish than I thought.
He spun and slapped his vambrace.
We are imperfect, Alkanex. Every one of us. Our genetic code is as rotten as that of these creatures you so casually dismiss as animals. But somehow they survive, where we do not.
He advanced, forcing Alkanex back a step.
Why are we so fragile, brother? A twist in the helix, and we break like twigs.
He snapped his fingers for emphasis.
Answer me that, eh? Use that fancy sword of yours and carve me a path to the truth.
Fabius!
Thulgrim's voice, echoing suddenly through the foxlink, cut through his anger like a knife. Fabius calmed immediately before replying,
Here, my lord.
Return to Nova Basilos immediately. The situation has escalated.
But,
Fabius began. Alkanex turned, head cocked. Hear that? Fabius did. The low-pitched whine of an etheric engine. The mutants scattered, moving swiftly. They knew what that sound meant. Alkanex cursed and lifted his bolter.
Time to get back to the gunship, spider.
He grabbed Fabius's arm. Fabius jerked free and started towards the Stormbird, Alkanex pacing after him.
Fabius, returning now, my lord. But there's an airship incoming.
Ah, Do as you see fit, my sons. Let nothing hinder you.
Fabius glanced at Alconex.
You heard the Primarch?
Alconex grunted.
Move faster!
The airship swept south, punching through the clouds like an angry wasp. It was a small, narrow thing, big enough for only a single pilot and moving fast. Primitive turbines explained the speed. Fabius had known that the Continental Government had a few assault craft in their fleet, but he'd never thought to see them in action.
He's flying low, he said.
Piss-poor targeting systems, Alconex said. He has to be right on top of us if he wants any chance of hitting us with those stub cannons.
He gestured briskly.
Keep going. I'll be along shortly.
What are you planning?
This is twice now that someone on this mudball has tried to kill me. I intend to show them what I think of that.
Don't be foolish. All it takes is one lucky shot.
Then I'll have to make sure I get lucky first, eh?
Alconex strode to meet the oncoming airship. Light flashed beneath its hull. Fabius heard the dull chatter of guns. The dead soil was churned into clouds of dust as the airship swooped towards them. Whoever was flying it was trying to cut them off before they got to the Stormbird. A good plan, if they had been dealing with the merely mortal. As it was, Fabius reached the gunship's embarkation ramp in time to see Alconex's duel with the airship in full. The airship dove, guns spitting. Alconex set his feet and took aim. He barely twitched as stray rounds plucked the paint from his ceramite. The bolter roared. The airship twitched like a wounded animal. Alconex stitched the hull with steady precision as the ship passed overhead, putting out one round after the next. The explosive rounds were meant to punch through armour, and they easily perforated the thin hull plating of the primitive craft. Muffled explosions sounded, and smoke boiled out of the stricken vessel. Alconex followed it, still firing, intent on bringing the airship down. He turned away only when it had finally struck the ground in a burst of fire and noise. He reloaded as he strode back towards Fabius and the gunship.
Well, that was easy enough.
Fabius pointed north. More lean wasp shapes were arrowing through the clouds. Their attacker hadn't been alone. Alconex grunted.
Ah,
my mistake.
Get on board,
Fabius said acidly.
I have a feeling that the Phoenician is going to require our services before the day is out.
It's Bucephalos,
Pike said. Her voice echoed through the cavernous confines of the palace situation room. Primitive cogitators and databanks lined the walls, and view screens that flickered with static showed scenes throughout the city. Staff, mostly pikes, though there were several clerks seconded from the Archite Palatines, moved to and fro, quietly going about the business of updating the hololithic data map Fulgrim had installed with up-to-date reports of the developing situation.
Of course it is.
Fulgrim leaned forward, tapping the map. He studied the scrolling data carefully.
Who else?
No one important.
She spoke crisply, no sign of distress or worry in her tone. The old woman was iron.
Patricians Glabas, Mac Rembolites, and Axuch for sure. A few dozen other lesser patricians, mostly from the Agri Circle. It looks like Patrician Phocas is bringing his security forces, 1,000 of them, down to join them. And that'll be a substantial force when it gets here. They've occupied the closest major rail and air terminuses as well, meaning the army units we've called back are going to be late, if they arrive at all.
Any sign of the Brotherhood?
None, but that doesn't mean they're not there. My sources say that Bucephalos and his allies are acting out of desperation. Someone provoked them into launching a full-scale attack. That bombing raid on the shipyards was just a way of announcing hostilities. I've also had word from the western provinces of uprisings against the patricians and the Continental Government both.
They've attacked Fabius and Alconex as well, Fulgrim said.
They are moving, as I knew they would. I've made the city a target, and they are taking aim in a most obliging fashion. He smiled, pleased. It always made for a satisfying feeling when the enemy did exactly what was expected of them. The hololithic map of Chalcedon was divided up into sectors, each one highlighted in different colours. The patricians were mobilising, though few of them had yet to reveal their loyalties one way or another. That, too, he'd expected. The longer things took, the more likely they were to throw in with Bucephalos and his lot, or worse, strike out on their own. He needed to put an end to this, swiftly and decisively. Abdomon gestured to the map, illuminating several areas close to Nova Basilos.
There are forces moving from the north and the west, along the old trade roads, infantry and artillery with minimal air support. We saw some of that earlier today. The local patricians are moving to control all routes into and out of the city before Bucephalos gets here, probably so they can bargain with him over access.
Lord Commander? Fulgrim asked, glancing at Fraser. The Lord Commander of the Arkite Palatines frowned.
The walls won't stand up to a concentrated barrage, but the outer emplacements will bloody the noses of anyone stupid enough to get that close.
He tapped the map, highlighting a section of the city walls.
If it were me, I'd use the air support to get the infantry in close, under the range of the emplacements. Thanks to that bombing raid, we don't have much in the way of anything that can match their air power. I still don't understand how that was allowed to happen, by the way.
He glared at Pike, who shrugged.
I'm not in charge, Herodotus. Don't look at me. I was following orders.
It was a necessary sacrifice, Lord Commander,
Fulgrim said smoothly. I want them to think that they have a chance. Otherwise, this will be no fun at all. Fraser and Pike shared a look as the assembled space marines chuckled appreciatively. Fraser cleared his throat.
You'd know best, my lord.
He turned his attention back to the map and continued his assessment.
Once they have the emplacements under control, they can pound the city with its own outer defences, or just sit tight and wait for the ensuing panic to do their job for them.
Fulgrim nodded, pleased by the Lord Commander's assessment. It matched his own quite closely.
They won't wait, he said. Remember, they are as much at the mercy of time as we are. It is in everyone's best interests to resolve this swiftly. If they can force the government, and by extension us, to capitulate, they force us to deal with them on their own terms. If we hold out, there is every chance that their coalition will fracture under the weight of competing goals.
He studied the map.
I have worked too hard to ensure that this particular Hydra has only a single head. We need to remove it before it can bifurcate once more. But that means teasing the beast fully into the open.
He looked at Quinn.
I need you to hold those emplacements. Can you do it?
Quinn slammed his fist into his chest.
Alone, if necessary, my lord.
Fulgrim smiled.
Take Flavius with you, just in case. He gestured to Fraser. You must hold the walls, the city, in fact, and keep the situation from becoming untenable. I don't care if we lose whole districts, but the palace must remain inviolate. So long as Pandion is in our custody, we hold the moral authority, and our position remains the stronger.
Fraser nodded.
Easily done. Pandion was paranoid enough to bivouac a substantial number of troops in the city, even before things started to go wrong.
He paused, one finger tapping the las pistol holstered at his waist.
We won't be able to count on all of them, of course. Even after your demonstration a few days ago.
Already taken care of,
Pike said calmly. Fraser glanced at her. She smiled and raised a glass of wine.
I winnowed out the last of the more unreliable members of the officer caste a few days ago. So many accidents. Unprecedented, I'm told.
She emptied her glass.
But we'll soldier on in their absence, I'm sure.
Fraser laughed harshly.
I think I'm beginning to like you, Lady Golconda.
I knew you'd come around.
Fulgrim looked at Abdomon.
Take Telmar and Thorn and head off those patricians who are advancing towards the city but haven't yet joined Bucephalos.
Abdomon frowned.
Oh.
Remind them of their loyalties and what awaits those who spit on the Emperor's friendship.
Fulgrim hesitated.
Don't kill all of them if you can help it. I need enough of them intact to throw at Bucephalos.
Is that wise?
Pike said, when Abdomon and the others had departed to see to their duties.
If I were Bucephalos, I'd run at the first sniff of my former allies turning on me. We won't be able to catch him, or the others. Unless you intend a surgical strike right into the heart of their army.
Fulgrim grinned.
Something like that, but not yet. Bucephalos and the renegades aren't the only enemy we face, remember?
He gestured to the map.
Amusing as this is, it's all just a preamble.
You're talking about this Sabazian brotherhood of yours?
Pike frowned.
You think they're going to... what? Pop out of the woodwork at the last moment? Obligingly reveal themselves for the chop?
That is exactly what I think, Lady Golconda. They will have no choice, especially given that I ordered the army units en route to turn around and return to the western provinces and the Agri Circle the moment the first bombs fell on the shipyards. Pike nodded slowly. If she was annoyed that he hadn't informed her of the change of plans, she didn't show it. Then iterators had to be adaptable.
You wanted to draw them out, tempt them into taking advantage of the worsening situation?
And now I will bloody them. The army will be given orders to aid those patricians willing to declare for the continental government. Their commanders are to sanction anyone rebelling against the authority of the patricians and the hereditary governor with extreme prejudice. Crucifixions are, I believe, still popular here. Pike grimaced.
Harsh measures.
But necessary ones. The point must be made, and made firmly. Fulgrim frowned. I must make myself an enemy of all Byzas, so that Byzas will unite to deal with me. He smiled sadly. The Sabazian Brotherhood will have no choice but to meet with Bucephalos and the other patrician leaders to propose an alliance once this initial attack fails and the executions begin. The army units in the western provinces and the Agri Circle will put pressure on Bucephalos, forcing him to meet with the Sabazians, or risk fighting a war on two fronts. And then I will have them.
And you know where this supposed meeting will take place?
Oh, yes, Fulgrim laughed. They showed me.